Welcome back to the Missing Maura Murray podcast. I am Tim, here today with Lance in the Crawl Space Studios. What's up, Lance?
Oh, not too much. How are you today?
I'm doing great.
Great.
We are joined in this episode by our new intern, Lulu.
Lulu is a very smart and articulate young woman. Happy to have her on and happy to welcome her back after diving deep into our emails, which can get kind of, how would you say?
Muddy.
Muddy is good.
Yeah, icky. Yeah.
Icky.
Sometimes, but always appreciated. Like, you know, in a sea of criticism that we get in our emails, there are some really nice emails that come through. And so we just want to say thank you to all those with the encouragement and everything. And thank you to everyone who emails, really.
Right. Keep them coming.
Yeah.
And thank you, Lulu, for diving into the well that is our emails and coming out on the other side fully intact, which is a bit of a challenge sometimes.
Yes. Yeah, so thank you to all our emailers. We really appreciate it. So this episode is Lulu reading some recent emails to us. Also, we wanted to invite you to check out our latest Crawl Space episodes, which were from our live show that we did with psychic Lori Bruno at the Rockwell in the Boston area last Sunday. So we released all of this audio on the Crawl Space feed. Maybe some of it will end up on the Missing Maura Murray feed at some point, but for right now, all of it's over there. You want to hear the whole thing? There's two episodes. Check it out. Also, just want to say, as far as criticism for having a psychic on, like, we get it. You can save your email. We heard it all the first time. There's no possible way you can be original in trying to make fun of us for using a psychic.
And after experiencing what it was like to spend an hour and 45 minutes right next to Lori and hearing her speak and fielding the questions from the audience, you could have just taken the word psychic out of it. She's just an amazing human being. And I would have sat there and listened to her history, where, you know, her lineage. She worked for NASA, for God's sake. And that was just like a blip in the conversation. I thought that was going to be a huge topic, but it wasn't.
Because she's so interesting. And we talk about Maura Murray. So the Maura Murray talk kind of bookends the conversation with Lori. And it's about a 2-hour conversation, but it kind of starts there and it kind of ends there. So check that out on the Crawl Space feed. Hope you like it. And as for this episode, this is Emails with Lulu. So please enjoy. So follow us on Twitter at Maura Murray Doc. And we're on Facebook and Instagram. Also, check us out at CrimeCon 2018.
Nashville.
Early May. You got to be there.
We will be premiering a cut of our documentary that we've been working on for the better part of 3-4 years now. I guess when the official start date was is a little bit fuzzy at this point, but we will be showing a cut from this documentary. It's going to be about 60-65 minutes, followed by a Q&A after, and we're proud of it. We've been watching it and fine-tuning it.
Yeah, we think it's really interesting, so we're really hoping that you guys like it as well. So check it out Friday night at CrimeCon, May 4th. Lulu, welcome to Missing Maura Murray. How are you today?
I'm good. It's really great to be here. This is exciting.
Thank you very much.
As exciting as it is for you, I can't imagine saying that it's exciting to go through emails about, you know, what we do. It's super exciting for us to actually have somebody who's proactive.
Yes.
And we sent you a request, a couple days go by, and you don't ask. It was so refreshing to just get the information. Just get the information and not have to do it ourselves.
Well, it was fun for me.
Good. Glad to hear that. And your work was great on the Israel Keys episodes. We want to say thank you for that as well. What was that like, digging into him? And I know we assigned you to watch a lot of his videos. What was that like?
It's weird, especially with him, because he's so calm about it. And you see, in his case, he doesn't have any feelings towards his victims, but he's not completely a psychopath because he still has these feelings about his daughter. I saw throughout a lot of his interviews, he has this really deep concern about his daughter and how his daughter is going to find out about his victims and what he's been up to for her entire life. So that was just really interesting because he's not just this one-dimensional figure. He does have, and I don't want to humanize him because obviously what he's done is awful, but it was just, interesting to see that he's done such horrible things, but he still has compassion for certain people in his life.
That's a really interesting take because, I mean, we can agree. You said that he wasn't completely a psychopath, so we can agree he was a psychopath. So maybe that compassion isn't really compassion for his daughter as a human, but maybe it's more for a legacy that he is trying exactly. to uphold, and that goes right. into ego, perhaps.
Right. That definitely, he does have some selfish motives. And yeah, it could have been not wanting to protect his daughter and her feelings, but wanting to shield her from having this bad image of him, because that's detrimental to his legacy if his own daughter thinks of him in this certain way.
Well, we do appreciate you digging into that as your first official request of ours, which I guess if you can make it past that, then you've got
right.
A pretty,
it wasn't too bad,
pretty
honestly.
Stiff backbone.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, that was great. And then what about pulling the emails and going through our email inbox? What was that like?
That was interesting because you see how invested people are in this story, and there is like such a desire for people to get the truth about this story, and just like different people's takes on it. Like some people want to know if this is like, well, you'll see in the emails later on, like some people want to know if it's like a government conspiracy, and some people have concerns about the timeline, and some people have concerns about Maura herself and her well-being. So that was really interesting to see all these different people's takes on the case.
Okay, so let's get into these emails.
Okay.
Do you mind reading some of these for us?
Yep. This first one is from Julie with no subject. She says, "Hi, I'm on my second watching of the disappearance of Maura Murray. The very beginning says that Maura sent an email to her professors that there was a death in the family, and this was a lie. Maybe not. Maybe Maura knew there would be a death in the family, hers. I see suicide all through the documentary. I think the second car accident in a few days just solidified what was already her plan. I think that she ran a bit of a distance or farther than that. Isn't there a witness that thinks he saw her running? Drank and took sleeping pills, maybe deep in the woods."
Okay, so thank you, Julie, for the email, and thank you for reading that, Lulu. Obviously, suicide as an outcome is something that has been talked about constantly since we started this podcast, you know, at least on these airwaves and everything. It was touched upon in great detail, I would say, also in the documentary. However, Julie's reaction from watching the documentary is different from most people's.
Julie, the emailer.
Yes.
Yes.
I think that most people watch the documentary and say, oh, okay, well, she didn't commit suicide because the Murrays don't think that she did. And the search dogs and the search teams searched like a really, like a 5-mile radius, like in great detail to where there's pretty much no chance that she's in that area.
I appreciate the fact that we get to go back and have the opportunity to catch people up. Because you know we're at a point where we're so deep into it, and there are people that are just getting involved in all of this because of the TV show, or they're just finding out about the case. So it's really fortunate that we have the opportunity to answer these questions. Suicide was one of the big theories that was out there, and I think for the most part, I'd say 95%, you should rule out suicide for the reasons you mentioned, and also. On the show, you have the New Hampshire
Todd Bogardis, from Fish and Game.
Fish and Game. That's the organization I was trying to remember. The found statistic for people who are in the woods in that area is astronomical. Maura Murray is one of two, I think, that he said have not been found.
Yeah.
So just with statistics on the Fish and Game end.
Okay, but you're talking about the area that was searched. I'm not sure if she's saying that she got out of this area because she says a bit of a distance or farther than that. And then she mentions the witness sighting, which is, as far as I know, a little further than the
parameter that they searched.
Yeah, at least in great detail, yeah.
You have to think about all the people in the in the weeks, the days and weeks and months. And even Fred going up there at this point, he used to go up there a couple times a year. He still goes up there once a year or more. Mm-hmm. And does, I mean, in the beginning he was going through in the woods.
Him and Rick Graves.
And, you know, right during the disappearance and the days after, it was both families, the Rausches, the Murrays, everybody was in there. And to this day, we get emails from people who said, oh, I found this weird thing in the woods. You know, we found this thing that was sort of looked like it was buried, and it looks like a, you know, an article of clothing.
Yeah.
So if nothing has been found of her in the woods, I'd say we're at that like 95 to 100% chance that she did not commit suicide in the woods.
This next one is from Sarah. The subject is 001 police SUV. Has anyone suggested that maybe the SUV that the psychic kept seeing was the police SUV that witnesses A saw? The psychic kept saying it was dark with white on it. She only said maroon after the red truck was mentioned. And when I Google images of the police SUVs in that area, they are those colors. I'm not really a believer of psychics, but just maybe the driver of that police SUV had something to do with her disappearance.
Yeah, this is another a common question we get. Thank you, Sarah, and thank you for reading it, Lulu. So the psychic kept saying a dark and white SUV, and I, Tim here, put red or maroon or something in her head, basically. I mentioned it. Was it red or something like that? Like a big idiot. And so really only then did it start to kind of blur for her. So I apologize about that. But yes, Sarah is right that the SUVs in that area are black and white. Obviously, the SUV being the person who took Maura has been something we've talked about constantly in the past 2 years. But at this point, it seems like it's not what happened to Maura.
As a matter of fact, we will be having a conversation at some point, probably the next episode, we're not sure yet, about Art Roderick's timeline, which details out to the best of anyone's ability in law enforcement what was going on with the SUV, with the time frame, with witness A's sighting, and the all corresponding with the dispatch logs. So he's got a relatively detailed breakdown of that, you know, hour or so window. But that question is still out there. That question is still lingering. It's an uncomfortable topic because you're talking about a police conspiracy in a town that has, you know, a handful of police officers at this time and, you know, even less back then.
Lance, as you know, we have two websites by Squarespace, Crawl Space Podcast and MauraMurrayDoc.com. And they were so easy to build, weren't they?
They were incredibly easy to build. You don't need to know code or anything. It's very intuitive. They have beautiful templates created by world-class designers to choose from.
It's so easy. You just click and drag and you pull what you need. It resizes. It looks great on mobile. Nothing to patch or upgrade ever.
And you can sell products and services of all kinds. You can sell these cool coffee mugs that we have, tickets to the next live show that we do.
And 24/7 award-winning customer support, which, you know, when you're having technical difficulties trying to build something like this is hardly anything more frustrating. So there you go. 24/7 support in case you're building it in the middle of the night.
Right. And I've actually utilized that and gotten an issue resolved so quickly, I realized it wasn't even an issue in the first place.
So make it stand out. Stand out with a beautiful website. Easily create a website by yourself with Squarespace.
Guys, destiny is calling. Do you hear that? It says you need to build a new website. Make it with Squarespace.
So go to squarespace.com/MMM for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code MMM to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
All right. This next one is from Leah. She says, I am a nurse and have some experience dealing with psychiatric illness. Maura was allegedly bulimic. She was displaying a pattern of reckless behavior. She was a textbook case for a pending psychiatric break. Most psychiatric breaks occur in young adults when they are under immense pressure. She was under pressure constantly academically, athletically, and within her family relationships. Her father was hard on her. Her sister Julie apparently was very hard on her. And bulimia is a disease of control. Eating disorders often develop as a means of gaining control over one aspect of one's life. Sometimes they feel that this is the only thing they can directly control. I also don't understand why Maura's mother is never spoken of. I know she passed away a few years after Maura disappeared, but she was certainly present and active in this whole situation while it was happening. Yet the story is always presented without much mention of her place in all of this.
Okay, thank you, Lulu, and thank you, Leah, for the email. Couple of things. Maura's mom is seldom mentioned in the story, as she says, like as it's presented, because they're, I don't know, I guess. I mean,
well, it's a family thing. It's, you know, if they wanted to talk about her more, they would probably talk about her more as far as like the community looking into it.
Well, she got sick.
She got sick.
And
yeah.
So she wasn't really so much part of the search or the investigation. And so that's kind of what we're talking about here. It's not like she wasn't active in their lives. She was. And you can listen back to our Remembering Maura episode and you can hear some stories about her. So she was completely active in their lives, just not so much in the parts that we cover. And the bulimia thing, well, first of all, she says that her father was hard on her and her sister Julie was apparently very hard on her. I don't think that's substantiated in
right.
any way.
The key word here is allegedly.
Yeah.
It's never been accurately proven or whatever that Maura was bulimic. There's never been a diagnosis out there that says that she was bulimic. There have been stories and rumors and speculation on it. So keep that in mind. You know, Leah uses the word allegedly, and that was responsible of her. That was good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Also,
but she doesn't use allegedly when she says her father was hard on her. And
that's
her
exactly
Julie
what I was about to say. Yeah.
Yeah.
We know that Fred, through Julie's account and Fred's own account, was that he did push his kids. He pushed his daughter. Both of his daughters, all three of his daughters, Julian and Maura were competitors on the track team. They were competitors with basketball. And again, if you go back and listen to the episode, The Remembrance of Maura, Julie talks about how Maura would let her win on occasion, and it was a healthy competition. And I know that there has been certain things that have been put out there, like I can't believe Fred would make them run on Christmas morning. He wasn't making these people. He wasn't making these
yeah.
girls run.
He's responded to that. He said they wanted to run. I did things that they wanted to do with them.
Right, and they hiked and they pushed themselves, and that's you know, he could have been hard on them. He could have been a tough father, but if you look at what Julie's become, I mean, I would say that that's pretty decent parenting.
I don't know if Julie would agree either with that. So yeah, I mean, just
right.
not to focus 100% on those two sentences, but possibly not true. So,
right.
So yeah. So I don't know where that leaves us. But we appreciate the professionalism from Leah about bulimia and things like that. And it is something that's been talked about. We just don't really know.
Right. And the knowledge that comes with you know, Leah's description of how bulimic people behave is pretty spot on. But again, you have to go back to it being. It's
speculation.
Yeah, it's speculation. And not all bulimic people want to drive away and, you know,
right.
kill themselves or, you know, sometimes they just want to get away.
Mm-hmm. Okay, this next one is from Courtney. Courtney says, first, can you please confirm what happened to the alcohol that Maura bought on her trip to the White Mountains? Was it in her car? What alcohol was there in her car? Secondly, in regards to the party she went to before she crashed her father's car, do you think that it's possible that Maura had some kind of breakdown at the party in front of her friends? And that's why her friends said that she had told Fred what happened, but wasn't going to share with anyone else. This could explain why in the first couple of days after she went missing, Fred told the police that he believed his daughter went to the White Mountains to harm herself. Just a theory. Also, when you spoke to the psychic, she mentioned seeing Maura get into a dark SUV. Could this tie into Witness A's testimony of seeing car 001 pulled up nose to nose with Maura's car? She also mentions an eagle. Do any local police departments have an eagle in their crest? So Courtney has a lot of questions.
Good
to
questions.
Go through.
Thank you, Lulu. Good questions, Courtney. We appreciate the email. A lot to unpack here. I like all the mentions of the psychic because we're doing that live show actually with the psychic in about 10 days from now. The psychic she's talking about is Lori Bruno, who is a friend of ours. We can't answer what alcohol was bought on her trip, right?
I can't answer with any sort of definitive, confidence that it was a certain alcohol. We know that there was the wine coolers or, you know, like a Seagram's or something. Mm-hmm. We know that there was a Franzia box of wine that was found in the car. But aside from that, I mean, that is just that is one of those like areas of speculation. That
it's weird.
We know she stopped at a liquor store. Also, it's evidence.
Right. We're pretty sure we know what she bought there, but then some of it isn't reported to be in the car. So, yeah, it's very gray. It's very fuzzy to us even still. The other thing I wanted to mention about this email that I thought was interesting, she mentions the party the night that she crashed Fred's car. She says, do you think it was possible Maura had some kind of breakdown at the party in front of her friends? That is not what we know to be true. It doesn't seem like there was a breakdown, but I agree some of her actions after the accident seem emotional. Could be because this was signifying the end of her relationship with Bill, and then she gets into this car accident. So obviously, either way, whatever we're talking about, whatever part of what I just said is true, there's a ton of stress on her that night.
Right, and to go back to Art Roderick again, if we do know the answers to these things, does it bring us any closer to finding out what happened to her? I'm not saying it does or it doesn't, but when you ask these questions, and these are awesome questions, when you ask them, just keep that in the back of your mind. Is this important? Does it have anything to do with how we're going to find her? I think the alcohol in the car is a good question. It's an excellent question because it suggests, is she buying alcohol that would look like she's going to meet two or three more people? Is she buying a massive amount of alcohol, or is she buying a six-pack?
And also, we talked to one private investigator who worked on the case who had something really interesting to say about the alcohol. He says, you know, that a certain alcohol was bought in Amherst, and it wasn't in her car. So this person suggested that maybe she stopped at a party and maybe that, or at a house or something, dropped something off, and then went back on the road for whatever reason. I just thought that was interesting. Not saying that's true. I have no idea. But maybe that would account for some of that missing time, and maybe that would account for why some of those bottles aren't there.
And who did she meet? Yeah, exactly.
We
don't
know.
The missing alcohol, the missing time, and who did she meet? So, yeah, now that's a solid question. Mm. And at first, I was thinking, like, I wrote down the word nope after I heard that question because I didn't think that we would be able to answer that. But leading into, could this be a way that we figure out what happened to Maura? Absolutely.
Problem. Why do guys turn to weird solutions or do nothing when they can turn to medicine and science?
I wish that there was a solution to this, Tim. Tell me that there's a solution.
Oh, you better believe it, Lance. It's 4hims.com.
Oh, I've heard of these guys. One-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, sexual wellness for men.
Thanks to science, baldness can be optional.
Thank you.
Yeah, Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss.
Now, these are well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair. No snake oil pills or gas station counter supplements.
Prescription solutions backed by science. No waiting room. No awkward doctor visits. You save hours by going to 4hims.com.
So easy. Why wouldn't you do this?
Order now. Our listeners get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today, right now while supplies last. See website for full details. This would cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy.
Go to 4hims.com/MMM.
That's forhims.com/MMM.
forhims.com/MMM.
All right. This next one is one of my favorite emails that I saw. This is from Trent Gilliam, and Trent says, What if Maura Murray disappeared on purpose with the help of the government to work undercover? What if her stealing from Fort Knox was a total setup? Everybody said it was unlike her to steal. So what if high-ranking officials scouted her out at West Point, offered her a job, and started the process of making her disappear to change her identity for undercover work?
Thank you, Trent, and thanks, Lulu, for reading that one. Again, another one we've gotten a lot over the years and something we've even considered and talked to some people about. We do talk to our buddy Bob in the episode titled West Point. We asked him about this because he went to West Point, and we said, we kind of laid out the scenario to him and said, if a person was recruited for a position like this, would they leave their car in a mysterious way and things like that? And he's like, no, the person would just go to the airport and that's it. So, I mean, you can listen to that for a more specific answer, but I think this question kind of gets laughed off by the professionals.
Right.
Yeah, it's a really fun scenario to think of, and it'd be awesome if it was true. But like you said, look at the circumstances of the disappearance itself. If you're being recruited to do undercover work, you're not gonna leave an area, and you're not gonna leave a situation like that where you've just put attention on yourself.
Right.
You're just gonna slip away.
This next one's from Phoenix. Phoenix says, my personal theory is sudden psychosis. Full-blown psychosis can set in just 6 hours, and there are often warning signs weeks or months in advance, such as depression, impulsive or unsafe decisions, general change in affect or demeanor, etc. Something that isn't well understood about psychosis is that the delusions often exist within a brain that is functioning totally normally. Maura is set up for psychosis, possibly by an underlying genetic vulnerability, a brain tumor, etc. I like the brain tumor idea because it can affect motor skills and symptoms that can be badly exacerbated by drinking.
Thanks, Phoenix, for that email and also putting it in my head that I have a brain tumor and in 6 hours I'm going to fall into total psychosis.
So Phoenix is a professional, works with family-based children, youth, and families for wellness. So I think it's interesting that this comes from a professional. Other than that, I mean, I don't know. We obviously can't comment if Maura had a brain tumor or anything like that. I would just say it's super unlikely.
This one is from Brianna Smith. She says, during the accident, would both airbags go off if Maura was the only one in the car? I know in my current car and past cars, the airbag off light comes on when no one is in the passenger seat. I know it was an older car, but just a thought.
Good question, Brianna. Thank you for reading it, Lulu. And this is also a question that we get pretty frequently. I would say like one out of every 15 emails in the inbox is
sure
about this, maybe 20. We did look into this, and Maura's car was in 1996, was technically before the mandate was put in that is what Brianna is describing, that there's a light and it would flash, and if there's weight in the passenger seat, then the airbag would go off. That all wasn't a thing in this 1996 Saturn. So just because both airbags went off, it does not mean that anything was on the passenger seat.
Well said. And again, yeah, it's a question that we get all the time from those people who are just starting off in this case. Keep it coming.
This next one's from Benjamin Duffy. He says, wait a second. So Kathleen Murray was in Maura's dorm at UMass, even though she didn't know that Maura was missing. What was she doing there? How did she get in?
Okay, thanks, Benjamin. Interesting question. This is something we've heard, but it's a little bit tough to say either way. I don't really think this is probably an email we got that we didn't reply to because we don't have anything to tell this person. I don't know.
If Kathleen was there and she spoke to law enforcement about it and law enforcement considered her answer a credible answer and it's not leading to anything that would find Maura, then, that information probably isn't just going to be put out there publicly. But it is, it, it very well could be something that the answer's out there. It's just been lost in the you know, the crock pot of information that we got going on.
Also, I'm sure Kathleen knows, so it would be great to talk to her about it at some point. But maybe we'll ask her at some point to come on the podcast.
This one is from Kiera, and she says, "You guys have talked about there being a time where the podcast may end, and I see they haven't. Did you think when you started this podcast that this mystery would be solved by now?"
Good question, Kiera. I have no idea. I don't think I can answer that question because I don't think that I necessarily thought it would be solved by now.
Well, when we started, I definitely didn't think that it would be solved because it didn't seem like it was solvable. It didn't seem real.
It also wasn't the goal, the original goal or intention of our podcast,
right?
To solve it. It has since become, the goal of this podcast has sort of changed a lot throughout the years that we've been doing it, and so now it's more about keeping the conversation going. But will the podcast end? And we've mentioned a time that the podcast may end. I mean, yeah. I mean, it'll end at some point.
It'll end when we don't have anything else to talk about. I can answer right now that, yeah, I do think that this mystery will be solved.
Oh, yeah.
Now. Yeah. And if it is solved, then you're in for at least another 4 or 5 years of this podcast.
Oh, man.
Corinna Lee says, "In regards to the money that Fred Murray withdrew the day Maura went missing, do you know if the money was ever accounted for? What I mean by that is, was the money found to be on Fred, or was the money gone when it was asked about?"
Thank you, Corinna, for the question. This is another one that's a common question. So Fred's answer is that he put the money into an account that she could access, Maura, being she, could access using her social security number. And from what we've heard, that money was never touched. Now, I don't think it was the full $4,000 that he put in there. I think I recall it might have been like $500 of that $4,000 that he put in there.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the actual figure was.
I think it was that. And then when asked what happened with the rest of the money, he said, "It's no one's goddamn business what I do with my money." And he's right. It is no one's goddamn business what Fred does with his money. He can put it in an account, he can put it in his pocket, he can do whatever the hell he wants with it. But the facts are, what we heard is he took $500 out of that $4,000 and put it into an account for more access, to which she never did.
Right. There was never any activity on the account, and I don't know how long they kept it open. It was for a couple of years, right?
I if I'm not mistaken, it could even still be open. These days, you can get practically everything on demand.
Tim, I demand to get our podcast.
Well, it's not a problem. It's on demand. You can listen whenever you want, wherever you want, so it's convenient for you.
So if that's true, if you can get everything on demand, why are you still taking trips to the post office to mail letters and packages?
When you can get postage on demand with Stamps.com. I see where you're going with that.
That's exactly where I was going. You read my mind.
Yeah, it's 24/7 when it's convenient for you. You can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package using your computer and printer.
But what do I do with it then?
Then you mail it.
And then the mail carrier comes and picks it up.
We use Stamps.com to send out our merchandise, and it couldn't be easier. So right now, go to stamps.com and use MMM for this special offer. It includes $55 in free postage, a digital scale, and a 4-week trial.
You get a digital scale with that?
So don't wait. Go to stamps.com before you do anything else. Click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage and type in MMM.
That's stamps.com and enter MMM.
This next one is from Peter Rice. Peter says, "One thing that came to mind after this episode, which began a lot of speculation, also just a note, he's talking about episode 5, specifically the idea of her pulling off an incredible one in a million disappearing act, is all the trouble she found herself in leading up to it. Was she ever fingerprinted? Even if not criminally, for any job? I just find it hard to believe, with the events in the year leading up to her disappearance, that she would be so squeaky clean for the last almost 14 years that she wouldn't have found herself in trouble again."
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Peter. Yeah, that is what we talked about, I believe, on that episode. Sounds familiar.
Yeah. I love the point of that he makes right here at the end, that if she was, and I think
I'm pretty sure we made
this,
that point.
Oh, what was that?
So that's why you love it.
It feels like it was like 7 years ago.
Yeah.
If she had been as as in trouble and as reckless as people made her out to be beforehand. She just stopped all that activity in the past 14 years, and she's living a clean, off the grid life.
Yeah, one thing we know about crime and doing what we do, and especially looking into the Breonna Maitland case disappearance, is that criminals escalate usually with their crimes. So yeah, if it started as stealing makeup, using a credit card number to order pizza, it'll go to something more and something more and more. So yes, I think the answer I think is yes, that she probably would have found herself in trouble again in the last 14 years if she was still out there, assuming that she was some master criminal who was, escaping her life.
It would be ridiculous. She abandoned her car. Her cell phone was never used. No credit cards were used. The bank account wasn't touched. So that would mean that she had planned this for a long time. And like certain serial killers, she had a stash that she kept. She knew she was going to disappear, and she dug up the stash of like a burner cell phone.
A disappearance kit.
It's a great point to make.
And was she ever fingerprinted? We don't know. No idea.
Yeah, we know that the misconception out there with the picture of her that we talked about that frightened Tim that time.
Don't remind me.
I know, sorry.
It's embarrassing. Episode 3.
It's I like that. It's embarrassing, but I'll plug the episode. Yeah. We know that that's often been miscategorized as a mugshot. That was a picture that was taken outside of her dorm. It wasn't a mugshot. So if you're looking at that picture and you think, well, she got a mugshot, she was probably fingerprinted, it's not necessarily in respect to each other.
Right, but I think the picture was taken by UMass police, so that's why the confusion's there. It's like against like a cement wall. So she's not downtown getting booked at the station. She's just at like downstairs at her dorm, and she got like a ticket.
This one is from Stephanie. She's a new listener. Stephanie says, "I'm bothered by the locked car. Did Maura lock her car before abandoning it, or did police lock it? I feel if Maura were to flee the scene on foot, she wouldn't be concerned about locking her car doors. Makes more sense that she was picked up by someone she knew and locked her car doors with the intention of returning to the car."
Thank you, Stephanie, for the email. Great,
awesome.
Great point. I mean, I think we agree that because the car was locked, so we've heard the car was locked, presumably by Maura. That is the report, that the car was locked when the police approached it. So it was presumably by her. And yeah, I would agree that it seems like it was with the intention of returning to her car.
Exactly. It just, there's really no speculation unless she had a compulsion to always lock her car. It does very much seem like she made the decision to walk away from her car or leave her car, and she locked it. That means that she was probably coming back or had plans to come back to the car.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean she didn't disappear because of this lock, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
So, keep that in mind too. It's not like that good of a clue.
If the alternative is if the car was found with the doors open and it's still running and the headlights on, then that suggests something a lot more sinister happened.
Agreed.
All right, the last question for today is from Travis. Travis asks, "Have they completely ruled out that maybe she wasn't the one driving the car? If there's a possibility of a 45 to an hour missing from her timeline, couldn't it be that maybe something or someone happened to her before the car made the trip? If Atwood was the only one who saw her after the crash and it was dark, and we all know how reliable eyewitnesses are, could it have been another 20-something girl, and when he was shown a picture of her, he was mistaken?"
Thanks, Travis, for the question. This is one we've talked about a little bit, too. I guess the answer is, again, we don't really know. It's super unlikely that it wasn't Maura at the car. We kind of can say, as we said in the previous episode, that you can never know 100% that it was Maura at the car because she hasn't been found still. So there's no one out there who can say with 100% certainty that Maura Murray was in the car.
Right. There is an element to this that you introduce when you say, was she not the one driving the car. That means someone else was driving the car. That means that there's someone else out there who hasn't come forward to say, I was driving the car and why. And that means that, as far as we know, law enforcement found no other finger. Like, if they had found other fingerprints or other evidence that somebody else was in the car, that would mean they didn't follow up with that. Or if they did, that person is where? Doing what? You know,
yeah, we never heard of it if that's the case. Yeah.
Right. It's now injecting this whole other mystery, but questioning it is awesome.
Yeah, questioning is awesome. We can't say for sure it was Maura, but we can say for like 99.9% that it was Maura. Yeah, again, if it wasn't Maura, then this person is out there, and really that's based on no evidence. So you can have fun with the theory, but we can't take it any further.
Every factor leading Maura to the location of her car indicated that it was her. With the searches online, with the MapQuest directions, you know, calling bed and breakfasts and inns, taking up money from her bank account, and Butch identifying her after seeing her picture, it does lead us, you know, to that 99% chance that that was her.
Okay, thank you, Lulu, for pulling these emails and reading them to us and joining us on this episode. We really appreciate it.
Of course. It was a lot of fun.
That was a fast 40 minutes.
That flew by, yeah.
Yeah.
We should do that more often.
Definitely. There's so many questions out there that people still have and that I'm sure you guys still have.
Well, thank you, everybody, for listening.